This is the Tasmanian Country Hour with Fiona Breen on ABC Radio Hobart and Tasmania.
Good afternoon. Coming up on Friday's Country Hour, we'll talk wool and wool prices. We'll also go to the cattle markets and talk to farmers toughing out dry conditions.
Just trying to keep them to a nice steady condition that they can actually make it through winter. So started feeding back in February and March and haven't stopped yet.
You can hear those cattle offloaded at Piranha yesterday. More on those markets in the second half of the program. And it's shearing time for many Tasmanian wool properties. We'll head inside one of the sheds on Bruny Island to hear how the clip is coming off.
It's very similar to the Midlands area. I've been on a bloodline of sheep, Yarrawongas, from New South Wales. I've had that breed now for 5 years and it's put an extra kilo of sheep on the wool.
But first, let's stay with wool. And I'm joined by Alistair Calvert, long-time wool broker in Tasmania. Good afternoon, Alistair.
Good afternoon, Fiona.
Thanks for coming into the studio. Well, it's been a huge couple of weeks for wool. Last week, prices dropped quite dramatically. What was going on there? How much did they drop, first off?
They dropped significantly following the week previous to that, which was also fairly sharp losses. Basically, the 3 weeks up until now, we've seen between 150 and 200 cents eroded off the market.
So explaining that to the public, what does that mean? It's quite a chunk, isn't it?
Oh, it is. Yeah, no, we're talking about 15% roughly. So fairly significant, yeah.
And how'd we go this week?
Yeah, the market was still cheaper this week, albeit not to the same degree as we'd seen in the previous 2 weeks. So most merino indicators lost between 15 and 40 or 50 cents for the week, yeah.
So that's talking thousands, isn't it, when you're talking about a wool clip that you've got up for sale, say, in the auction market?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Yeah, I mean, if you go back 12 months ago where the market was at its peak, we're probably talking about anywhere between $500 and $1,000 a bale, less than what we were receiving at the highs of it.
Yeah. Right, okay, that's a significant downturn for farmers. Can we blame Trump? Is the trade war in China affecting our wool prices? I mean, he's getting blamed for everything else at the moment.
It seems pretty convenient, doesn't it? Look, I mean, obviously it's not helping. Wool is a discretionary spend at the best of times, and consumer confidence gets hit by, you know, what's happening around the world with various different things. Obviously, Mr. Trump is one of those, along with what's happening in Hong Kong and Brexit and Europe, etc. So it's impacting consumer confidence, which is therefore impacting sales.
Well, they say that the Chinese population just not spending much money at the moment either.
Yeah, exactly. Obviously, we all know about fantastic run China's had over the last sort of 6 to 8 to 10 years economically, and things have slowed down now, and hence the same thing's happening. They're keeping their wallets in their pockets to some degree.
And wool is being affected by weaker European economies, and we've still got Brexit to come. So there's all sorts of things going up and down there, and that comes right down and affects our farmers here.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, it does. I mean, Europe, Germany is quite often used as a bit of a catalyst, I suppose, in Europe, and that, you know, very strong economy, and things are looking a bit tough there too. So if that's the catalyst, yeah, no, things are tight in Europe, and Europe traditionally with the woven sector, particularly in men's suiting, we're hearing numbers out of Europe that sales are down 25-30% this year. So that's definitely going to impact on prices for sure.
Could you visit a lot of these places, Italy, and various places in Europe, Germany, taking some farmers with you? And that's where they're making these sort of materials made out of wool. Apparently they're just not making as many or not selling as many.
Well, they're certainly not selling as many. They work on a 12, 18-month, two-year cycle. So obviously have trade fairs at certain times of the year, and people, they show their collections, if you like, and then their customers place orders. And if the orders aren't coming, then obviously it flows back down the supply chain to the growers, and there's a lack of demand there. But yeah, we think it's very, very important to stay in contact with our customers in Europe and other parts of the world very regularly, visit once or twice a year, and also stay in weekly contact with them.
Been doing my homework and just reading up a bit. And I hear there's an increase in man-made fibres in blends to help cheapen wool.
Yeah, obviously. I mean, we've got to remember that wool's come from a historical high in the last 12 months. So, well, that's the first thing that a lot of companies do, taking out, I guess, the absolute top end of brands and retailers that, you know, they'll stick to 100% wool, of course. But the people that are selling more of a average type product, the first thing they'll do is increase the amount of man-made fibre in there to try and cheapen the garment costs, so therefore they can try and sell them through the retail outlets.
The winners appear to be farmers no longer mulesing. Now, mulesing is where the skin's cut off the sheep's backside to avoid fly strike. That's a pretty nasty condition. But there's a few farmers not mulesing, and they're finally getting a premium.
Yeah, this has been building for probably the last 12 to 18 months or longer, but certainly it's coming to a head now. And even in this current tough market that we've seen the last couple of weeks, anecdotally there is numbers coming out of the auction rooms that are suggesting particular types are receiving a 200-cent premium over similar like types that are declared as mulesed or not declared as non-mulesed. Sorry. Yeah.
What sort of percentage of farmers are no longer mulesing here in Tassie, do you think?
Again, it's a little bit hard to get the figures exact, but I estimate around about 30%. That includes Merino and crossbred growers, yes.
And how does that compare to the national average?
Well, quite a bit higher. Obviously, our clip is quite a bit smaller than other states, but proportionately, The national average is around about 13%. So 30% is a significant rise on that.
So hopefully those growers that are not mulesing, maybe they've got the higher end, the finer microns, they might continue to get a little bit better than some of the other growers?
Well, I hope so. And hopefully it can be a catalyst for people to look at their on-farm operations. I think that I don't think this sort of thing's going away. So I understand it's a difficult decision for some people, but at least, I think we should be looking at it. There's no doubt that in a market like this, when it's tough to sell something, if you've got sought after attributes, and that's probably the most sought after at this point in time, it certainly helps to sell your product.
There's also things like fads that make a big difference. We talked about the fake fur fad, which actually was using wool, and that was big 12 months ago. Now that's slowing to a trickle.
Yeah, absolutely. That was big in China, and typical of the Chinese, they excuse the cliche, but they like to follow like sheep. And so that was a fad, and that sort of underpinned the crossbred market for a while there. But just like the the double-sided fabric a few years ago, same sort of thing happened for the carding market. So, yeah, it comes and goes for sure.
Okay, Alistair Calvert, well, if you could stay with us, because we've got another wool story later in the program, and we'll chat a bit more about wool in Tasmania.
The Tasmanian Country Hour with Fiona Bream on ABC Radio Hobart and Tasmania.
Now, how much do you support Tassie's wool industry? Do you wear wool? I've seen a bit of a resurgence. I mean, my daughters scour the Vinnie shops looking for secondhand wool clothing because, quite frankly, it's keeps you warm. Do you buy wool? Get in touch via our text line. Tell us what you think. 0438 922 936. Do you look out for wool? Do you try to wear wool? 0438 922 936. Now, as growers around Australia constantly look to maximise their crop yields, they're relying on tests in labs to help make decisions about soil, water and crop types. One lab outside Devonport is making the most of a farmer's thirst for more information. Darren Hicks told Hugh Hogan that as margins get tighter, farmers want to squeeze the best out of every crop rotation, and science is helping them achieve that.
We analyse soil, plant and water. We are relatively specific to those three products, but we have a variety of different tests within those.
So for those three basic cores, what metrics in there do you measure?
They're similar nutrients. It's the agronomically significant nutrients that we focus on. So within a soil, it's the macro and micronutrients, it's the pH, it's the carbon level, and several calculations based on that data. For water, it's similar. It's the macro and micronutrients. pH and EC are very, very important as well. And for plant, it's the similar suite of nutrients. It's monitoring those specific nutrients that are designed to help crops achieve the best result in pack out and quality and yield.
Where would you say most of your business would be? Is it in the soil or is it in those water tests?
It's pretty well balanced, actually. It's a fair balance between all three, soil, plant and water. Plant, we probably do more plant than the other two, but water's probably coming third, but only just.
Now, what's your point of difference with other testing companies?
Oh, it's our turnaround time. We're by far well recognised as the fastest lab in Australia. Our SAP testing plant test that we do is the same-day turnaround. Our water test across Australia is the same-day turnaround. Once we get our hands on those products, we get results out the same day. Our soil tests generally take 5 days. That's still faster than most of the other labs in Australia, if not all.
Now, how exactly does that benefit a grower, though, having those data available immediately?
Oh, well, if there's an issue, they need to know straight away what the issue is, and once they can identify the problem, then you can solve it. By identifying it essentially immediately, you can then prevent any detrimental effect on the crop, which starts to knock down your yield, which starts to knock down your quality. It's achieving a better result by getting more information more quickly.
How does it work? You've got express post packages flying all over the country. How do you deal with biosecurity there?
Yeah, we've got a permit from Biosecurity Tasmania to import plant, soil and water from anywhere in Australia. And we do. There's every state sending us plant and soil and water every day. We have a very strict protocol here. Once samples enter the lab, nothing that has come from interstate actually then leaves the lab except in a rated biosecurity disposal facility. So we're very conscious of that and we certainly respect those guidelines.
So it's a one-way trip. Where's the most far-flung place you've got a sample from?
Oh, wow. We do a lot of work in watermelons, for example, up in the Northern Territory. We also do melons from Kununurra over in WA. We're seeing capsicums, tomatoes coming from North Queensland at the moment. We're seeing pasture from the middle of New South Wales. Not that it's too dry over there for much pasture, but it's every state. South Australia, we do a lot of wine work in South Australia as well.
What sort of producers are using this tech?
Oh, look, everything from the very, very small guys to the very large corporate entities. We deal primarily with the advisors, the agronomists and the consultants more so than the growers, but that's not to say we don't deal with some very large corporate growers and some individual growers as well.
Michael, have you seen an increased interest in like these advanced soil or sample tests?
Yeah, definitely. I guess over the course of the last few years, as quality has become more important and, you know, the quantity and yield, you know, that's what people are trying to achieve. I mean, our logo here is Monitor to Manage. It needs to assist, you know, the customers, the growers, and that's what we are here to help the growers achieve.
What do you think's driving that?
Yeah, I think margins are definitely tighter for the growers, but I just think, you know, it aids us all if we can get the growers better yields and quality. I mean, all the larger supermarket chains currently are after better quality. Of course, you know, their customers, their shoppers are also after quality. So
now there's new industries popping up in Tasmania all the time, it seems. Do you get much interest from them?
Certainly recently with the addition of, you know, the berry expansion, that has assisted us, you know, greatly with the amount of soil testing, plant testing they're doing. And there's no doubt the berry industry would be reaping the benefit of also, you know, monitoring as well. You know, certainly with berries, we're analysing a lot of water as well. I mean, as they are putting, you know, nutrients in and onto the berries, we're also analysing, you know, that input and what's coming out in the drains, because obviously with, you know, environmental factors and, you know, driving efficiencies, they don't want to be putting more inputs in and having it, you know, run to groundwater, so that's also very important.
Now, you basically just send back raw data, is that right, rather than remedies?
Yeah, look, we send back raw data. We also give them an indication or a guide, but if from there they're after, you know, inputs and so forth, that's where we stop, because we really do value at AgVita, our independence. We're not an on-seller of fertiliser or products, so we really value that independence as far as AgVita sit.
Now, it's a hive of activity here in a pretty unassuming building outside Devonport. How many employees do you have?
About 12 to 13. Mind you, that can grow to by a couple over, you know, November right through to probably the end of March, which is our busiest season. As you can understand, Southern Australia, that's their main horticultural season. So, and our business case is that no matter how many water or plant arrive on that day, I mean, our business case is results must go out that day. So we prepare for that. And obviously that's critical for our clients also.
And that was Michael Ruffles, General Manager of AgVita Analytics. And you also heard from Darren Hicks, the Technical Manager. Coming up later in the program, have you ever had a sip of Ruby Zeitgelt? It's common in Europe, but virtually unknown here. Stay with us to find out more. Now, Australia's largest field day event, AgQuip, is wrapping up in New South Wales today, with farmers taking a three-day reprieve from ongoing drought. While more than 3,000 exhibitors made the trek to Gunnedah to showcase the latest in technology, farmers are taking the opportunity to window shop for the future. For many, it's a chance to get together and take a much-needed break from the dry, as Lara Webster reports.
I guess I'll declare AgQuip 47th officially open, and one we'll all remember. Thank you.
I'm surrounded by thousands of exhibitors with the latest in farm technology and machinery on show. But 2019 isn't expected to be a big spending year here, as the drought continues tightening the purse strings. In fact, the stalls who'll probably make the most revenue are those cooking up the famous steak sandwiches.
We just headed straight for the Murray Grey Steak Department.
While farmers are here window shopping between sandwiches, AgQuip is proving a much-needed respite from the drought. Cattle producer Bob Stoltenberg is taking a break from hand-feeding stock.
We've got 1,500 acres and it's very bare. We're running about 250 head of cattle at this stage and feeding them. Sent some to the sale today, actually. I'm just with high expectations, but the agent said don't expect too much.
That seems to be the message going around at the moment. You are at AgQuip. Are you window shopping today, or are you looking to the future and some investments?
Only small investments today, just a few fiddly things like jumper leads and things like that.
So no big investment?
No, I don't buy big investments. Everything on my farm is like me, old but fairly fit.
We've heard this year from different organisers and people that there are a lot of farmers coming more for a window shop because the purse strings are tightening and the drought's increasing. Do you find yourself in that position as well in terms of window shopping?
Exactly. I don't think anyone would be purchasing because there's not out my way and west of us. There's just nothing growing and very depressing, actually.
So to come to AgQuip then, does that sort of give you a bit of a break off the day-to-day, what you're doing away from the dry and feeding stock? Is it a bit of a break for you?
It's a lovely break. Try and forget about everything bad and try and enjoy something nice. Fed the cattle before I came, so they're smiling and it's a lovely day, unfortunately.
For grain growers Xavier and Angus Martin, it's also a good opportunity to socialise and forget about the lack of rain.
Yes, well, we've just come from the bacon and egg roll at GRDC breakfast, and yesterday I certainly had a steak sandwich at one of my agronomy supply groups and caught up with the peer group of agronomists and some grain marketers there, so very important social interactions, and that's some of the glue that holds us together through these difficult times.
Yeah, I'd have to agree. There's some people, they mightn't live that far away, but you only see them once a year at AgQuip. You meet a lot of new people, and you meet a lot of people that you mightn't see as much as you'd like. So, we'll enjoy a few drinks later.
But it's also some time to do some planning for when the weather turns.
AgQuip has, for many decades, been our family's clearinghouse, if you like, for research and review, for strategic planning of what we're thinking about in technology and upgrades in the future. And it remains the same, even though it's a rip-roaring drought. I think the access to technical support, the crew that you don't necessarily always get access to through the retail sales dealerships, is always an important aspect of AgQuip. And I think in a drought too, we're looking more and more carefully at our longer-term investments. various projects around water and electricity and grain storage in our case.
For exhibitors, they haven't come here expecting to make money, but they're hopeful of generating interest for the future. Exhibitor Murray Langford from Mount Gambier in South Australia made the trip for the first time in 10 years.
For a show like this, you really just got to be in front of people. You've got to, yeah, I don't think you make too many sales at them. Most of the people we've talked to don't, but certainly you have to be here, make people aware, and certainly there's been some good inquiries there, so that's good. Most of the guys I've spoken to have been looking long term, and even though it's not so good up here now, certainly next year could be a different story altogether.
And that was Murray Langford from Mount Gambier, ending that report from Lara Webster. And I'm going to postpone that story about Zeitgeld, because we've just got in a story from Queensland that you might be interested in. So stay with us to find out more.
This week on Landline, an agricultural giant looks down under for answers to its water woes.
And Australia can be a great country to learn from, try to make our water situation better here in the state of California.
And residents fight back over plans to shut down an outback mining town.
It'll take the government to kick me up the arse to go. Otherwise, I'm going to stay here.
That's Landline, 12:30, Sunday on ABC TV.
The Tasmanian Country Hour with Fiona Breen on ABC Radio Hobart and Tasmania.
Now, Tasmanian seafood giant Tassal is moving north. We heard this earlier in the week that it had purchased a 7,000-hectare cattle station near Proserpine in North Queensland to develop a new aquaculture facility. Tassal representative Ben Daly spoke just moments ago at a press conference near Proserpine. Here's what he had to say about the investment.
The investments we're making, which are quite exciting, start now. We've been investing already, and we're going to be investing all the way through, you know, up for the next 5 or 6 years. So there'll be a constant stream of construction and development jobs as we bring on the stable employment jobs that go and running the company.
Can you talk us through the facilities that you've got here?
Yeah, sure. So a prawn farm has three parts. So it's got pond infrastructure where we grow the prawns. Then it's got hatcheries that hatch them from eggs into little larvae that go into the ponds, and then it's got processing facilities that then take the finished prawn and get it ready for the market. Yep. And so that's what offers that broader range of jobs. There's scientific roles and genetic roles from the hatchery through all the way to mechanic and engineering roles in the plant. And then the farms are actually running smart farm systems, which involve automation and electrical and engineering skills as well.
Why is Tassal looking to expand into North Queensland in particular?
Yeah, look, the Northern Queensland provides the environment that's suitable for growing the tiger prawns that we'll be bringing to the market due to the warm temperature. But it's also one thing that's quite important to us is having certainty of investment and appetites from the community and the governments. And what we found up here is that there's a huge support from the government with their aquaculture development areas and from regional communities to have jobs. And that's as important to underpin our growth as it is having the product. So there's a really good combination of things happening up here in North Queensland. We also think it's quite an underdeveloped industry that we can really help facilitate the growth from. And we're hoping that by us coming in, we'll actually probably stimulate some more investment in aquaculture in this part of the world.
Just how important is diversifying the company's interests given the controversy around salmon pens in Tasmania at the moment, your company's heartland?
Yeah, sure. I think from our point of view, what we grow is a very sustainable product down in Tasmania that's heavily supported in the market. We've seen 10% growth in salmon demand per year for the last 10 years. Salmon and prawns make up 70% of seafood sales in Australia, and we also sell prawns now. We just haven't seen supply growth coming on prawns. So it's been important for us. We see it as a very sustainable and healthy species like salmon that we now come and help stimulate supply growth into those same markets that we're providing our salmon into. And we've certainly seen that demand from consumers, both here domestically and internationally, for that supply.
Can you talk us through the acquisition of Exmoor Station and what your plans are with regards to that cattle grazing property?
Yeah, sure. So Exmoor for us is super exciting, and I suppose our businesses typically run 10-year horizons for investment. And what Exmoor provides has been a government aquaculture development area is 2,000 hectares of potential aquaculture space that we can grow into. For us, that gives us a time horizon to continue our investment and attract, you know, money from shareholders. So our initial plans is to complete the development of our existing farm here at Proserpine, and whilst we're doing that, we'll go through the development approvals for Exmoor so that we can move into then developing Exmoor. And the combination of our current farm here and Exmoor will take us down to that 20,000 tonnes of prawn farm production target.
And wastewater management, are there any concerns around that given incoming reef regulations that will more set more stringent, I guess, parameters on the quality of water leaving the farm?
Yeah, look, I think what's really pleasing for us up in Queensland is the government actually now has a very organised regulatory approval process that we've found very accommodating to work through. We've been working through that process and getting approvals for our expansions here. Because our lands are also very large blocks of land, we've got lots of space for water treatment. As a company too, we're very heavily experienced in water management, in operating our aquaculture facilities in other parts of the country. We've got a lot of skills in our business to work through those environments. So we're seeing that landscape as a part of the approval process we need to work through, but not being something that lacks the confidence to come and invest. And I think we've seen that this week, where we've seen a lot of investment appetite come into the business to grow the operations up here. Yep.
And that was Tassal's representative Ben Daly speaking just moments ago at a press conference near Proserpine. He was talking about Tassal's purchase of a 7,000 hectare cattle station near Proserpine in northwest Queensland to develop a new aquaculture facility. Now a look at today's forecast and Deb Tabor. How are you
Hello,
going, Deb?
How are you? Good, thanks. How are you?
What was the rain doing overnight?
Okay, well, it has decreased a bit compared to the last week. So up to 9 a.m. this morning. So in the last 24 hours, the highest falls were at Derwent Bridge, which were 14 millimetres, and Lake St Clair and Myena reported 13, Hart's Mountains on 12 millimetres. Then since 9 a.m. this morning, Cradle Valley has reported 4 and Mount Reid 3 millimetres.
Okay, and what's the outlook like?
Right, so we have a high to our north at the moment and a cold front to move over the Bight. So we're seeing fresh northwesterly stream over Tasmania today with some light showers about the west and north, but fine everywhere else. That cold front is expected to cross the state tomorrow afternoon. So those light showers about the west and north will increase in the afternoon and extend to most districts in the evening, but little about the east. We'll see a southwesterly change late tomorrow, some snow falling to around 600 metres just close to midnight, and possible hail about the west and south, but again it's not until late. So expecting around 10 to 20 millimetres of rainfall in the west and far south, around 5 to 10 on the northeast highlands and central areas, but less than 2 in most other places. On Sunday, after that cold front moves away to the east, we'll see a moderating southwesterly stream and a high moves over the Bight, extends a ridge over Victoria. So for Tasmania, some showers about the west and far south, but fine elsewhere. Possible small hail in the west and south during the morning, left over from that cold front, and areas of frost elsewhere. Some snow levels to around 700 metres, but they will rise on Sunday. Then on Monday, a persistent high, which sort of just tracks near Adelaide during the day, and that maintains a westerly flow over us. So we'll see some showers about the west and far south, but fine everywhere else. A little bit of frost in the north in the morning. And then on Tuesday, those westerly winds continue, but they do freshen as a cold front moves west of Tasmania late on Tuesday. So some showers about the west, far south and Bass Strait Islands, with light showers extending to the north, and mostly fine conditions elsewhere on Tuesday.
Okay, do we have any warnings?
Yes, we have a gale warning for today and tomorrow over southwestern waters. And for today, a strong wind warning for the southwest lakes and also most remaining waters except for the lower east coast and central north coast. And then the strong wind warning is current for all coastal waters tomorrow, apart from the southwest where the gale is current. And it also includes, for the strong wind warning, the southeast inshore tomorrow and the central plateau and southwest lakes.
Okay, so coastal waters and swell.
Yes, so for the rest of today, west to northwest winds 15 to 25 knots, reaching 20 to 30 knots about the southwest, and 35 knots at times in the southwest, and 20 to 30 knots about the northeast. That will extend to remaining western waters tonight, so increasing there. For tomorrow, northwesterly winds of 20 to 30 knots, reaching 35 knots about the southwest, shifting southwesterly at 20 to 30 knots during the afternoon, and then decreasing to 15 to 25 knots in the west. Seas of 2 to 3 metres tomorrow, reaching 4 about the southwest in the morning. At midday, the wave rider reported 3.2 metres with a maximum of 5, a period around 12 seconds. Matsaika Island at 9 a.m. was on a southwest swell of 2.5 metres, and Bruny Island a southwest swell near 2 metres. For the rest of today and tomorrow in the west and south, we can expect a west to southwest swell of 3 to 4 metres, and also a south to southeasterly swell around 1 metre, which will decrease further tomorrow. In the north, a westerly swell below 1 metre, increasing to 1.5 offshore late tomorrow. And in the east, a south to southeast swell around 2.5 metres, decreasing to 1.5 metres tonight, and then further to below 1 metre tomorrow. And there's also a south to southwest swell through there, 0.5 to 1.5 metres tomorrow, reaching 3 metres in the south.
Okay, Deb Tabor, thanks very much.
No worries,
catch you next week.
The Tasmanian Country Hour with Fiona Breen on ABC Radio Hobart and Tasmania.
Now, farmer Lee Davis is the fifth generation of his family to run a merino operation on North Bruny Island. He's seen lots of changes over the decades, particularly during his stint running the property. Jane Longhurst caught up with Lee Davis in the middle of shearing. He took a little time out to chat about farming on Bruny.
There's not many true farmers left on the island. Like, there's a very small amount that's mainly been taken up by holiday makers and people from Sydney have moved in here and bought small properties, and they don't really farm them as farms.
When you were a young tacker, what's your impression of what it was like, you know, for your father and grandfather and so on, in terms of a farming community on Bruny?
Yeah, it was a really good. There was lots of small families, and you know, but now there's a lot of absentee landlords, and that's sort of ruined the farming side of the island.
How many sheep do you run?
About 1,500.
And merinos, I understand.
Yes, that's right, yeah.
And so how's their condition at this time of the year?
Oh, about a fat score of about 1 or 2. It's been a long, hard winter. There was no autumn break, and we really haven't had enough rain now for runoff for the water holes or anything, so we're just hoping for rain this month or next month so we can get a good spring and a bit of water in the water holes.
Well, I'm glad I brought a little bit for you. That it's passing through so quickly, it may not hit the ground.
I think it'll all blow away.
In terms of the shearing season, you've got wool classes working behind you and maybe 3 shearers.
Yes,
how do
right.
you go for labour?
Some of the shearers organise it for me, and like some of them travel the state, you know, just shearing all the time. So, and the same ones, I've got the same team comes back every year.
That's a good relationship built on trust.
Yes, that's right, it is, yeah, yeah. Now, if you look after them, well, they'll look after you. My wife, she cooks the meals for them, and they stay here on the island. We've got accommodation for them. And, yes, you've got to look after them if you want the job done properly.
So in terms of the kind of fleece that you produce, does it have a peculiar quality or an unusual quality compared to, say, fleece from Campbelltown?
No, it's very similar to the Midlands area. I've been on a bloodline of sheep, Yarrawongas, from New South Wales. I've had that breed now for 5 years, and it's put an extra kilo of sheep on the wool by using those rams.
So worth the investment?
Yeah, well worth it, yeah.
As you start to build the bales next to me here, where are they destined for?
Well, I just send them to the to Robert's Wool Store, and they go to auction, and I don't really know where they go after here.
So what's the next kind of big moment on the calendar for you and your farm?
Putting a bit of fertiliser on and sowing a couple of crops, I reckon, yeah. Try and get some fat so I can sell some, because if we don't get an autumn break or a spring break, we're in trouble, yeah.
And as we had such a terribly dry summer and it's been a bit of a dry winter, we really all are hanging out for some spring rain.
Oh, yes, that's right. Yeah, if we don't get that, you know, like, it wants something to drown the corby grubs and cockchafers, because they, you know, they eat much as the sheep. between them and the kangaroos, it's an uphill battle.
Who else have you got working here today?
I've got Nell French, Steve Marnie, and Tash Hansen, and Carl Laycock, and Bradley. He's another one of the shearers, and Clinton Palmer, and Mark Hansen. So that's our crew. Yeah.
And Tash is your rouseabout?
Yeah, she's our rouseabout. Yeah, she's still going to school, but she took a couple of days off. She likes working in the wool shed.
Well, isn't that great? She could have a future.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, no, I think she's just wanting to put herself through university and all, so she's making a few dollars on the side.
Oh, good luck to her.
Yeah.
And your wool classer, who's that?
That's Nell French. She does all the East Coast and the Midlands runs, like classing. Yeah, she's been doing it all her life.
How long have you been a wool classer?
35 years.
And who introduced you to the craft?
I grew up with sheep and wool, yeah, and my dad ran sheep on Maria Island.
So must be something about islands and remote places.
Yes, possibly, yes, because I always loved that place, yeah.
And how's the fleece that's coming off Lee's stock today? How's it looking?
Very well, they're very good. Possibly be a bit better if it was a better season, of course, yes, yeah, and a bit more feed around.
How does the fleece represent the fact that it has been a really poor season?
Oh, they often don't cut anywhere near as much wool, and it's a lot shorter. There's a lot of, not so much tender wool, because it's that's usually sudden changes in things that'll cause that. But, just not as much and not as good, no.
Are you in a position as a wool classer to find gigs throughout the year that kind of sustains you?
I've actually done the same places for a lot of years now, and I don't really bother sort of taking on new ones, no.
Just a nice position to be in?
Oh, yeah, it is. Yeah, I've got some really good farms that I go to, yeah. A few behind Oatlands there in Lamont, go there, and I enjoy that as well.
Do you see an enthusiasm or an appetite from like the next generation coming through that are keen to learn how to class like you?
Oh, there are lots now. Yeah, lots of young girls, yes, and they all do a very good job. Yeah, and there's lots of up-and-coming ones now.
That's a really good sign, isn't it, for the future?
Well, it is, and there are a lot of female shearers getting around now too. They're not afraid to have a go, and, there's quite a lot of them.
And that was wool classer Nell French and farmer Lee Davis in the shearing shed on North Bruny talking to Jane Longhurst. And we've had a couple of texts. Joy says, my family funds 2,500 acres beef, sheep, dairy and SA. So I'm not a city girl, but will not wear wool unless I'm assured it's non-mulesed wool. Shame on farmers who still resort to the practice. We've got Deb in Bishno saying, I love superfine and local wool. I invest in one or two items each year for my kids also. Great for layering. And Liz says, I choose wool first where possible and use wool blend socks. That's good news for you, Alistair Calvert. You're a wool broker here in Tasmania and a promoter of wool. That sounds pretty good, doesn't it?
Definitely. Now, we like people to support it. I mean, it's a fantastic product. And the myth that it was just a winter woolly, if you like, has hopefully been dispelled. And it's an all-round, all-year-round product these days.
Yeah, well, we're listening to that story there. We heard about wool classes and shearers, and they're two vital elements of the wool industry. Can't do without them. They get looked after down at Bruny, and I suppose it's different in every shed. I mean, they all get looked after, but some are probably a bit more modern or in the 21st century.
Going back now over the last sort of 20 years, as the country has sort of is less riding on the sheep's back, if you like. Maybe the focus on looking after staff and things and infrastructure has waned a little. I mean, I'm not going to say that generally, but in some cases it has. And you've got to be doing things properly and looking after people this day and age. So it's important that, you know, people provide good working environment for these staff, yeah.
Now, I believe your farm family has gone some way to ensuring we're training up the next generation of wool classes. Tell me about that.
This year, through our business, we've decided to sponsor a position within the TAFE wool classing course. We think it's vital that we're bringing the next round of classes into the system. We have a bit of a shortage, and the demographic is ageing. So it's important that we bring people in. It's a fantastic lifestyle opportunity, and in the last 12 months particularly, it's been an industry that's been at the forefront, if you like, with prices being returned. So so that's what we've chosen to do, and we'll go through that process in the next couple of months, where we'll select a person that's going to successfully win the scholarship that we're providing.
Yeah, and so those people, they do a TAFE course, you'll pick the best one, and they'll get some funding and maybe some work in the future.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, we wanted to make sure there was some prerequisites around the selection criteria, and one of those was that the students were handing in their work on time and completing the course and doing all the things they needed to do, because that's been a little bit of an issue for the classing course over the years is retention. So that was very important. And so we've provided some financial benefit as well as some placement to help reward this person. Yeah.
Okay. And shearers, just finally and just quickly, need to get some more young ones in the business.
Oh, we do. I mean, it's hard work, as we know, but unfortunately the age, again, is ever increasing of the average age of shearers, I should say. So, again, it's tough work, but it's not a nice lifestyle, and some people enjoy it, and we need to encourage as many through, the training courses and things that we can, so we can continue to get our sheep shorn.
Well, Alistair Calvert, Tasmanian wool broker, thanks for coming into the studio today and giving us a bit of an update on what's happening with Tasmanian wool.
That's a pleasure, Fiona.
Catch you again soon.
The Tasmanian Country Hour with Fiona Bream on ABC Radio Hobart and Tasmania.
Now, with spring just around a corner, there was certainly plenty of interest in the lineup of cattle at Piranha yesterday. Farmers in the parched south were offloading, while those having a wet winter were testing the market. Larissa Smith dropped by for a look and caught up with Elders Livestock Coordinator Greg Harris.
9.50 in stardom, surely. 8.50. I'm at 8.50 of it. 8.50 bid. 60.
Yeah, very solid. I would say it's very solid without being ridiculous. The job, spring quite isn't quite here. Everyone's saying it's not quite warm enough and it's a bit wet in places and everything like that. So I think it's very, very solid, but not being ridiculous spring prices as you'd seen in other years. Yeah,
a good yarding, though?
Yeah. I think we had a bit certainly over 1,000. I'm not sure how many more. I think similar over there. So it's a good yard, a real good yard.
What are buyers looking for at this time of the year, given where the season is in north and the south?
Oh, just stock for spring. Just spring stock, just to be able to take use of the feed when it comes and take advantage of it as it comes on. I don't think many are chasing breeders of that sort of thing, but anything that can, run on and use the spring feed. Yeah, that's this sort of coming into this spring times when they get active for that job.
And still some good weights coming through.
Yeah, there's some good cattle, and a lot of the cattle have weighed really well, like quite surprisingly. So, weights are good for this time of year.
Hi, my name's Anika White from Font Hill Farm and Amberley, which is the back of Oatlands at Lamont and Hamilton. We run Shorthorns, Angus and Pole Hereford cattle with a nice number at both places.
You've just sold some steers?
Yes, we sold three lots of steers in different breeds. The young steers just then sold for $670 for five younger steers that were born later in the year, about November, December. So nice age bracket.
Are you happy with the price?
I'm happy with that, considering the season and everything. We won't be able to run them on, so they're better off being off the place, and nice dollar in the process.
How much feed have you had to shove down their throats to get them to this point?
That question's not so nice. It's the most round bales in general that we've ever been through the last 20, 30 years of the places, with probably closer to 100 bales over our annual on worst year sort of numbers.
So they've been really expensive cattle to fatten.
Definitely this year is a tough year for us. We just trying to keep them to a nice steady condition that they can actually make it through winter. So started feeding back in February and March and haven't stopped yet.
Any green pick at all?
The Hamilton property has a light green pick, probably more sheep feed length, but the Font Hill is pretty bare.
What are you doing in terms of feed preparation, but also your carrying capacity? How many numbers will you carry then through the next couple of months?
So we've been looking at different options, whether we look at adjustment or we keep feeding. The number side of it, we've cut back as many heifers, like we've got a few heifers here to sell as well. We normally run around the 30 mark. We're cutting back to closer to the 20 future breeder heifers, and we'll cull back more as soon as the rest of the calves are born, whether we sell the cows with the calves at foot, like the older ones, instead of keeping them on like we normally would, just to reduce numbers so we've got less numbers to feed.
In summer?
Yeah, through what is really going to happen.
Ridge and Marg, live at Lilydale, and picked up a few stores, steer calves, probably a bit dearer than what they usually are, but just needed to restock.
You're in the market for them?
Oh, yes, yeah. We just fatten them on, sell them on.
What's feed looking like at Lilydale?
Slow at the moment, but on the paddocks we haven't got anything. Grass is holding all right, yeah.
Yes, they'll be fed on hay for a while, and then when the grass grows, they'll just take off, yeah.
We just need to get it to warm up a smidgen.
Yeah. Oh, yes, yes.
Not far away.
Yeah, sure, we thought we'd do it now before the grass takes off, and then we can just hold them and they'll go. Probably another month they'll take off.
We'll go and see the bank manager now. Thank you.
And it's still the preference. You see a lot of those mid-range cattle, they want those ones with a bit of weight in them, so they haven't got them for so long and that sort of thing. Your little ones, yeah, they still make a lot of money for what they are, but it's the dollars are in the cattle with weight.
Mm. And where are you anticipating the price to go in the next couple of seasons?
Is it going to dry up, warm up, get wet? Who knows? I think with the demand for fat stock and the shortage of fat stock, it'll still be solid regardless what the season is, but how mad it goes is will depend on the season, I reckon. Yeah.
And that was Elders Livestock Coordinator Greg Harris at Piranha. Richard Bailey, you were at the sale. What was it like?
Yeah, it was good. It was a good size sale for this time of the year, you know, for us here in Tassie. There were 2,146 cattle all up, both agents, and there were some good lines of cattle. And as Greg said, you know, it wasn't as cranky as last sale, but there were a lot more cattle. But it was still, I thought everything sold pretty well. I thought there were places, and you always get this in these sort of markets, where there are little places where there's a little bit of a lull, but generally speaking, I thought they sold pretty well. Just to give you a bit of an idea, the heaviest of the yearling off cattle, yearling off steers, made 1,330 to a top of 1,740. Some of them went to kill. Medium weights, 1,090 to 1,440, averaging around 350 cents a kilo, and lighter, 1,060 to 1,080. The heaviest of the yearling heifers, 1,200 to 1,310, and medium weights, 900 to 1,230, around that 295 cents a kilo. Then into the weaner calves, or calves, most of them have probably been weaned for a little while, but the lighter calves anyway. The best of the steers, 910 to 1,040, they made 350 cents a kilo. Light, 560 to 960, 370 cents. And then very light, and you know, some of these were pretty small calves, under 200 kilos, $500 to $650 or 320 cents. The heifers, 700 to 1,080, 300 cents. Light, 570 to 990, 295 cents. And very light, under 200 kilos, 490 to 860 cents, or about 295 cents a kilo. So I thought a pretty good day all around. It was a lovely sunny day, and it was, it's nice to see that number of cattle in one yard.
Well, hopefully some of those people we heard there in a Larissa's story made some cash.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think both, in general terms, I think both vendors and buyers would be, I mean, obviously buyers like to buy them cheaper and vendors like to get a little bit more, but generally speaking, I reckon they would be pretty satisfied. It lines up pretty well with most of the Victorian store sales that I've been monitoring, same sort of money, I think. It's interesting that there's still a few cattle coming in from over the water, and particularly from up in New South Wales. There have been cattle coming in from as far up as Tamworth, some from Hay, I believe. So, you know, that's still happening. Mm. It's really interesting also that when you got onto those bigger cattle and on over the back into the cows, that the processors were very strong. They basically bought anything that was killable. So that's a good indication that they're starting to get a little bit short of cattle in varying places.
Right, good for farmers. Mm. Okay, yeah, what about sheep?
During the week, the lamb market came back a little bit further in most places. We're starting to see a few more new season's lambs around. At Bendigo on Monday, 3,600 new season's lambs. That's up from about 1,000 the week before. And within a couple of weeks, that will get to 7,000 or 8,000. Most of them are quoted around that 850 cents a kilo, in that sort of bracket. Then the older lambs have fallen another 15 bucks this week, quoted around that 750 to 800 cents a kilo. Yesterday at Wagga, there were just a few less lambs, but there were more. There was 9,000 new season's lambs. Once again, old season's lambs a little bit harder to sell. New season's lambs quoted around that 850 cents, and older season's, like at Bendigo on Monday, 750 to 800 cents. The mutton market, though, has held up pretty well right through the week. A lot of sheep averaging around about 600 cents a kilo, you know, 580 to 620 cents a kilo, which is terrific money. And obviously that's on a supply and demand thing. There's not as many sheep around. And I don't suppose we'll be for a while. We seem to have killed a lot of ewes over the last, 12 months, I suppose.
Interesting to see how we go in the next few months.
Yeah, very much so, particularly lamb prices. It'll depend on how many new season's lambs are about. It doesn't affect us as far as new season's lambs go until later in November, but it will have an effect on what we're getting paid for old season's lambs as to what happens with the new season's lambs in Victoria and New South Wales.
Thanks very much, Richard Bailey. Catch you next week.
Thanks, Fiona.
Hi, I'm Helen Shield from Your Afternoon. Everything the ABC does, websites, talkback, live music, all of it is for you. And you can help shape what we do with our online feedback community, ABC Your Space.
I like being able to have a say on my favourite programs.
It's good to know they're paying attention to us. Every Australian has a stake in the ABC.
Help shape the ABC. Join Your Space.
It's only fair that we get to have our say.
Join now for your chance to win an ABC event prize pack too. Visit abcyourspace.net.au.
You're with Fiona Breen for the Tasmanian Country Hour on ABC Radio Hobart and Tasmania.
Thanks for joining us. Now, if you've got time today, hop onto our ABC Rural website. Have a look at this story. If you think your farm is a slice of heaven or maybe hell, hop onto the Rural website and have a look at one of Australia's most remote pearl farms. In the pictures, it looks like heaven. I wonder if they'll do a farm swap. The pearling leases at Elizabeth Bay, about 40 kilometres northwest of Nullumbai in Arnhem Land, were bought by the Autor Group in October last year. The acquisition included 140,000 seeded oyster shells and 40,000 juvenile unseeded oysters, as well as farm accommodation and a hatchery. I do like that idea about farm accommodation. And if you thought water was pricey in Tassie, spare a thought for farmers in New South Wales. You can read all about the market going through the roof on the ABC Rural website. That's abc.net.au/rural. Make sure you join us next week when Tony Briscoe will be back in the chair. We'll include the text line. Thanks for your text today about the wool industry and whether you buy wool. Catch you next week on Monday at 12 o'clock.
Footy not your thing?
Gets a kick.
The freakish kick!
When the footy's on the radio,
you can find other great content on ABC Hobart Digital, on the ABC Listen app and online at abc.net.au/Hobart.